A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been thinking about the two big noise nuisances in Jerusalem, vehicular and construction, and he wants to focus on construction. His core question is basically, are there cities anywhere in the world where noise ordinances for construction sites aren't just words on paper, but are actually tied to real-time sound level data? And what does that look like in practice, especially in places with lots of high-rise development?
I love this question because it cuts right to something I've been stewing on for years. You walk through Jerusalem right now and every third block is a construction site. Pile drivers, jackhammers, concrete pumps. And the weird thing is, we treat it like weather, like it's just something that happens to you.
The pile driver at 7 in the morning is the municipal equivalent of thoughts and prayers. We acknowledge your suffering. We will do absolutely nothing about it.
Here's the thing that really gets me. That pile driver isn't just annoying. A foundation piling operation can hit 110 decibels at the source. That's standing next to a jet engine. And in a dense neighborhood like Rehavia or Nachlaut, that sound is bouncing between stone buildings, traveling through the ground, hitting thousands of people within a 200-meter radius for 6 to 12 months straight. That's not a nuisance. That's a public health data point we are collectively refusing to collect.
Of course we are. Because if you don't measure it, it's not a problem, it's just...
The World Health Organization put out guidelines in 2018 saying construction noise exposure should be limited to 65 decibels, LEC, over an 8-hour period to prevent hearing loss and stress-related health effects. The piling is 110. Even through double-glazed windows, you're still getting 60 to 70 decibels inside your living room.
The gap between what's happening and what's considered safe isn't a gap. It's a canyon with a jackhammer at the bottom.
The prompt is asking, does anyone, anywhere, actually enforce this with data? Or is it all just complaint-driven, reactive, call the municipality and hope someone shows up 3 days later with a clipboard?
Which, spoiler, they won't.
They won't. And even if they do, they're measuring at the property line with a handheld meter at whatever random moment they arrive, not during the actual piling that happened at 6:45 in the morning. It's like trying to enforce speeding laws by occasionally standing by the highway with a radar gun for 15 minutes on a Tuesday.
The enforcement equivalent of a mime. Very expressive. Zero actual stopping power.
That's the landscape. Construction noise that's wildly variable, foundation work at 110 decibels versus finishing work like drywall and painting that's under 70. Regulatory frameworks that are mostly static limits with no teeth. And a building boom in Jerusalem that's replacing low-rise neighborhoods with high-rises, which means the construction phase is longer, louder, and affects more people.
The tools to actually do something about it are finally emerging. Sensor networks, frequency analysis, automated enforcement. Cities are starting to treat noise the way we've started treating air pollution, as something you measure granularly, at street level, in real time. But we're way behind on noise compared to air.
And that's the thing I want to dig into. Because the technology exists, the question is, who's actually using it, and what happens when they do? But before we get into the solutions, let's define what we're actually dealing with, because not all construction noise is created equal. The prompt nailed this. Foundation work versus finishing work is practically a different species of sound.
One is a geological event. The other is someone gently sanding drywall while humming.
The numbers bear this out. Piling and excavation, 110 decibels at source. Demolition with pneumatic breakers, similar range. But once the structure is up and you're into interior work, drywall, painting, electrical, you're under 70. That's quieter than a vacuum cleaner.
The problem isn't construction. It's specific phases of construction, and the phases are predictable.
That's what makes this so frustrating from a regulatory standpoint. We know exactly when the loud part is coming. The piling schedule is in the permit application. And yet most cities treat construction noise as a single category. Construction activity, 75 decibels at the property line, daytime hours only. That's the entire policy.
Which means the piling and the painting are regulated identically, which is absurd.
It's why construction noise is a harder problem than traffic noise. Traffic is relatively steady state. You get peaks during rush hour, but it's a continuous hum. You can model it, put up sound barriers, use quieter asphalt. Construction is episodic, extremely loud in bursts, and the source moves. Today, it's excavation. Next month, it's steel framing. 6 months later, it's generators and compressors running all day during finishing.
Traffic noise is a river. Construction noise is a series of avalanches.
That's a perfect way to put it. And measuring avalanches requires a completely different approach than measuring a river. You can't just stick a decibel meter on a pole and call it a day, which is what most cities do when they say they're monitoring noise.
What does noise monitoring actually mean at a municipal level? Because I think most people picture exactly that. A pole, a microphone, a number on a screen.
Effective monitoring for something like construction requires multiple sensors at multiple heights around the site, doing frequency analysis in real time to distinguish a jackhammer from a truck from someone's car stereo. Because if you can't classify the source, you can't enforce anything. The contractor will just say, that wasn't us, that was a delivery truck.
The acoustic equivalent of, I didn't do it.
Proving otherwise requires a sensor network that can triangulate the source location and match the frequency signature to known equipment profiles. This isn't science fiction. Companies like Briel and Kiar and SoundThinking, formerly ShotSpotter, have been doing this kind of acoustic classification for years. It's just that we've mostly applied it to gunfire detection, not pile drivers.
Which is a very American prioritization. Detect the gunshots. Ignore the slow erosion of hearing and mental health.
The slow erosion doesn't make headlines, but the WHO guidelines aren't just about hearing loss. Chronic noise exposure is linked to hypertension, sleep disturbance, cognitive impairment in children. These are measurable health outcomes. And we're just not measuring the input.
The core question the prompt is asking, are there cities where ordinances are tied to actual sound level data? That's really asking, is anyone treating this like a measurable public health problem, instead of an unavoidable feature of urban life?
Let's get into the hardware, because this is where it gets interesting. A modern urban noise monitoring network is not just a decibel meter on a pole. The sensors that companies like Bruel and KR, SoundThinking, and Libelium are deploying. These things are doing real-time frequency analysis. They're not just measuring loudness, they're identifying the acoustic fingerprint of the sound source.
So the sensor can tell the difference between a jackhammer and a truck, and someone's Bluetooth speaker playing what I assume is terrible music at a construction site.
It breaks the sound into frequency bands and matches the pattern against known equipment profiles. A jackhammer has a very specific spectral signature. Percussive, broadband, peaks in the low to mid frequencies. A concrete pump is different. A delivery truck idling is different. A pile driver is unmistakable, a low-frequency thump that travels through the ground as much as the air, and the sensor can pick that up and say, that's piling, not traffic.
It's Shazam for urban misery.
That's genuinely not a bad way to think about it. SoundThinking, which you might remember as ShotSpotter, they built their entire business on classifying gunfire acoustically in urban environments, distinguishing the gunshot from a firework from a car backfiring. The same principle applies to construction. The sensor hears a sound, runs it through a classifier, and tags it, jackhammer, pile driver, generator, ambient traffic.
Which immediately solves the that wasn't us problem. If the sensor network triangulates the source to your site, and the frequency signature matches piling equipment, there's not a lot of wiggle room.
Here's the catch, and this is where the granularity requirement comes in. A single sensor per block is useless for construction noise. Sound decays with distance, it's blocked by buildings, it reflects off hard surfaces in ways that make source identification messy. Effective monitoring for a high-rise construction project typically requires 4 to 6 sensors positioned at multiple heights and multiple locations around the perimeter.
4 to 6 sensors per project. That's not a citywide network with a handful of nodes. That's a dense local array.
That's why most smart city noise monitoring initiatives don't actually capture construction noise well. Barcelona is a perfect example. They've deployed over 500 noise sensors across the city as part of their smart city initiative. It's one of the largest urban noise networks in the world, but fewer than 3% of those sensors are positioned to monitor construction sites specifically. They're mostly measuring traffic corridors and public squares.
You've got 500 sensors, and you're still missing the thing that's actually waking people up at 6 in the morning.
Because the sensors are on lampposts at street level, typically one per intersection. Great for capturing the general soundscape. Terrible for isolating a specific construction site where the noise source is behind a hoarding, may be elevated as the building goes up, and the sound is propagating differently on different sides of the structure. You need sensors at the property line, at the nearest residential facades, and ideally at height, because once a building reaches 10 or 15 stories, the noise from upper floor work travels much farther than ground level noise.
This is where the physics gets counterintuitive. Sound doesn't just get quieter with distance in a city. It channels through street canyons. The building across the street might be getting hit harder at the 15th floor than at street level because of reflections off the glass facade.
The only way to capture that is with a distributed array specifically designed around the construction site geometry. This isn't something you can retrofit onto an existing citywide sensor network. It has to be part of the construction permit from day one.
The technology exists, but deploying it properly means treating each major construction site as its own monitoring project, which costs money and requires expertise that most municipal building departments don't have.
That brings us to the enforcement question. Let's say you've got your 4 to 6 sensors around a site. They're doing frequency classification. They're triangulating sources. How does that data actually become an enforcement action?
My guess is it's not as simple as, the number went over the line, here's a ticket.
It's not. And this is where things like leak and LMAX come in. These are averaging windows. Leak is the equivalent continuous sound level over a given period. So you might set a limit of 65 decibels, leak over 15 minutes at the nearest residential facade. LMAX is the maximum instantaneous peak. You might set a separate limit for that, say 90 decibels, LMAX, because even a single extremely loud event can be damaging.
The averaging window is everything because construction is inherently spiky. A single hammer blow might hit 95 decibels for a fraction of a second. If your threshold is based on that instantaneous peak, you're issuing fines every 30 seconds and nothing gets built. If you average over 8 hours, you can do an awful lot of piling before the number budges.
That's the fundamental tension. Too sensitive and it's unenforceable, too lenient and it's useless. Most serious proposals land on something like a 15-minute leak with a separate LMAX cap for extreme events. And then you need a third layer, source classification, because you don't want to penalize the contractor for a passing ambulance or a thunderclap.
The contractor's defense is always going to be ambient noise. That wasn't our pile driver. That was a truck backfiring 3 streets over. And if your sensor can't distinguish, your enforcement collapses and appeals.
Which is exactly why London's noise camera pilot is so instructive here. The UK Department for Transport deployed cameras with integrated microphone arrays on high complaint streets starting in 2022. These things automatically measure vehicle noise, capture the license plate, and issue fines for illegal exhaust modifications. Over 4,000 fines in the first year.
4,000 fines from a handful of cameras. That's not a pilot. That's a revenue stream.
The technology is directly transferable to construction. You put a noise camera at the perimeter of a construction site. It's continuously monitoring. When the classified construction noise, not ambient, not traffic, specifically construction, exceeds the permitted level for the permitted averaging window, it triggers an alert. That alert goes to the contractor, the municipality, and if it's a repeat exceedance, it automatically generates a fine. No inspector needed, no complaint needed, no 3-day delay.
The pile driver is a speeding ticket. Automated, indisputable, and immediate.
London's vehicle noise cameras use exactly the same acoustic classification principle. They're not just measuring loudness, they're identifying the acoustic signature of a modified exhaust versus a stock exhaust versus a truck versus a motorcycle. The classifier runs on the device itself, at the edge, so you're not streaming raw audio to a server somewhere. The sensor makes the call locally and just sends the metadata.
Which also addresses the privacy concern. You're not recording conversations, you're recording decibel levels and source classifications.
And that's going to matter enormously as these systems scale. But for now, the point is that the technical barriers to real-time automated enforcement have largely been solved. The sensors exist. The classifiers work. The data pipeline from sound to fine is operational, and London proved it at scale with vehicles.
Why isn't every city doing this for construction sites? What's the actual bottleneck?
Part of it is that construction noise is politically harder than vehicle noise. When you fine a driver for a modified exhaust, you're fining an individual. When you fine a construction site, you're fining a developer who's building housing the city desperately needs, who employs hundreds of people, who has lawyers and political connections. The enforcement appetite is different.
It's the difference between giving a ticket to a guy in a souped-up Honda and giving a ticket to a company that's building a 40-story tower and has the mayor on speed dial.
That's exactly what we see in practice. New York City overhauled its noise code in 2021. Construction sites are now required to submit a noise mitigation plan before they get a permit. That plan has to specify equipment types, noise levels, monitoring locations. It sounds comprehensive. But enforcement still relies on manual inspections by the Department of Environmental Protection. An inspector has to physically show up with a sound level meter.
The plan exists. The data exists in theory, but the actual enforcement is still a person with a clipboard, if they show up at all.
Which brings us right back to where we started, the mime with the radar gun. The technology for real-time automated enforcement is sitting on the shelf, and most cities are still operating on a complaint-driven model that might as well be from the 1970s.
We've got the Shazam for pile drivers, we've got the noise cameras, we've got the data pipeline, and we're just choosing not to use it at scale.
Some cities are choosing to use it, and that's where Copenhagen and Toronto come in. So let's talk about what happens when cities actually do it. Copenhagen launched their noise budget system in 2024, and it's the most interesting regulatory experiment in this space. The concept is beautifully simple. Each construction project gets allocated a noise budget measured in decibel hours.
So the same logic as kilowatt hours for energy. You get a certain amount of noise you're allowed to make, and when you've used it up, you're done.
It's tracked via permanent sensors around the site. Not a guy with a meter, not a complaint line. Continuous, automated, indisputable. The permit specifies your total decibel hour allocation for the week, broken down by phase. Piling gets a higher allocation than finishing work, but it's still capped. Exceed the budget and you get escalating fines. Exceed it twice in a month, and the municipality can issue a work stoppage order.
Has that actually happened? Because work stoppage orders are the nuclear option. Most cities threaten them constantly and use them never.
There was a 40-story residential tower that had its foundation work delayed by 3 weeks after exceeding its weekly noise budget twice. The contractor had to reschedule piling to midday hours, switch from diesel to hydraulic pile drivers, and install temporary acoustic barriers before they were allowed to resume.
On a project where every day of delay probably costs six figures, that's not a slap on the wrist. That's a genuine deterrent.
That's the knock-on effect that matters. When the data is public and the enforcement is automatic, the economics shift. Suddenly it's cheaper to invest in quieter equipment and better scheduling than it is to pay the fines and absorb the delays. The incentive structure actually aligns with noise reduction.
Which is the opposite of the current model, where it's cheaper to just be loud and hope nobody complains loudly enough.
Copenhagen made a deliberate choice to make the data public. Anyone can pull up the noise dashboard for any active construction site in the city and see the real-time readings, the weekly budget remaining, the exceedance history. It's a public API.
The developer isn't just accountable to the regulator. They're accountable to every resident with a web browser who can see that they blew through their noise budget by Wednesday afternoon.
That transparency changes the politics. You can't argue with a graph that's updated every 15 minutes and shows your pile driver hitting 95 decibels at the neighboring facade at 6:45 in the morning. The data doesn't have an opinion, it just is.
Which brings us to Jerusalem, because this is where the contrast gets stark. You've got high-rise construction in neighborhoods like Rehavia and Nachlau, where the buildings are stone, the streets are narrow, and a single foundation dig can last 6 to 12 months and affect thousands of people within a 200-meter radius.
Jerusalem has almost none of this infrastructure. The noise ordinance exists on paper. There are permitted hours, there are decibel limits, but enforcement is entirely complaint-driven. If nobody calls, nothing happens. If someone does call, an inspector might show up 2 days later with a handheld meter during a quiet phase and declare everything fine.
the enforcement equivalent of checking for leaks, by waiting until the ceiling collapses.
What would a Jerusalem-specific monitoring system actually look like? You'd need sensor arrays around major high-rise projects, probably 4 to 6 per site, positioned at the property line and at the nearest residential facades. The sensors would need to do frequency classification because Jerusalem has a lot of ambient noise. Church bells, sirens, the light rail, street festivals. You can't just measure loudness and attribute it all to the construction site.
You'd need the data to be public. That's the Copenhagen lesson. If the readings are only visible to the municipality, you've just created a more expensive version of the same broken system. The accountability comes from transparency.
The other model worth looking at is Toronto. Their Green Standard version 4, launched in 2025, requires real-time noise monitoring for all projects over 10 stories. But unlike Copenhagen, Toronto's approach is more about compliance documentation than active enforcement. The data has to be collected. It has to be publicly accessible via an API. But the municipality isn't issuing automated fines based on exceedances. It's more of a regulatory record-keeping framework.
Copenhagen is enforcement first. Toronto is transparency first. Both are better than what Jerusalem has, which is nothing, first.
Both have their trade-offs. Copenhagen's model requires the municipality to have the political will to actually stop work when budgets are exceeded. Toronto's model relies on public pressure and reputational risk to drive compliance, the theory being that if the data is out there, developers will self-regulate to avoid looking like bad neighbors.
Does that actually work? Self-regulation through transparency? Because my experience with developers is that shame is not a particularly effective motivator.
The early data from Toronto is mixed. Some projects are clearly using the data to optimize their schedules and equipment choices. Others are just collecting the numbers and hoping nobody looks too closely. The difference seems to be whether there are active resident associations watching the dashboards and making noise of their own.
The transparency only works if someone is actually looking at the transparent thing. A public API that nobody queries is just a very expensive way to store decibel readings.
Which is why I think the Copenhagen model is ultimately where this has to go. Automated enforcement tied to the permit. You exceed your noise budget, the system flags it, the fine is issued, and if it keeps happening, the work stops. No complaint needed. No inspector needed. No resident needing to become an amateur acoustician and spend their mornings filing reports.
The parallel to air pollution monitoring is almost exact here. For years, cities put a handful of PM2.5 sensors on rooftops and called it a monitoring network. But rooftop readings don't tell you what's happening at street level where people are actually breathing. It took a push for hyperlocal ground-level sensor networks to get useful data. Barcelona's 500-plus noise sensors are the right idea, but as you said, fewer than 3% are near construction sites. It's the noise equivalent of putting all your air quality sensors in parks.
Barcelona knows this is a gap. They're actively trying to close it by deploying additional sensors specifically around active construction zones. But it's slow, it's expensive, and every sensor deployment near a construction site requires negotiation with the developer about access and placement and who pays for it.
Which gets to the political and economic barriers. Who actually pays for the monitoring?
In Copenhagen, the developer pays. The sensor array is a condition of the permit. You want to build a 40-story tower, you install and maintain the monitoring equipment for the duration of construction. In Toronto, same thing. It's part of the Green Standard compliance cost. The municipality sets the requirements and audits the data, but the developer bears the hardware and installation cost.
Which makes sense. If you're going to generate the externality, you should pay to measure it. But I can see the pushback. Developers arguing that this adds tens of thousands of dollars to project costs and slows down an already slow permitting process.
That's the tension at the heart of all of this. We desperately need housing density. Jerusalem is in a housing crisis. Every high-rise that goes up is creating homes for dozens or hundreds of families. Adding monitoring requirements, noise budgets, potential work stoppages, all of that adds cost and time. The question is whether the health and quality of life benefits justify the friction.
I think the Copenhagen example suggests they do, because the alternative isn't cheap, fast construction. The alternative is cheap, fast construction that externalizes massive health costs onto thousands of neighbors who have no recourse. The decibel hours aren't free. We're just not counting them.
That's exactly the framing that's starting to gain traction in urban policy circles. Treat noise as a pollutant with measurable health impacts, not a nuisance. Once you do that, the cost-benefit math shifts. The WHO guidelines aren't arbitrary. Chronic exposure to construction noise is linked to hypertension, sleep disorders, cognitive development issues in children. Those have economic costs, lost productivity costs. The developer isn't paying those. The neighbors are.
The decibel hour budget is basically a cap-and-trade system for noise. You get a certain amount of acoustic pollution you're allowed to emit. Stay under, you're fine. Exceed, and you pay escalating penalties that reflect the actual harm.
Cap-and-trade worked for sulfur dioxide. It's not crazy to think it could work for construction noise, especially when the measurement technology has gotten good enough to make it enforceable.
The measurement technology is there, the enforcement models are there, Copenhagen and Toronto have proven the concept in different ways. The question for Jerusalem isn't, can this be done? It's, does anyone in the municipality care enough to do it?
What does this mean for someone who's actually living next to a construction site right now, not waiting for the municipality to get its act together? Because that's most of our listeners.
The first step is citizen science. If your city isn't measuring construction noise, you can start measuring it yourself. And I don't mean buying a $5,000 Breel and Kia setup. The NoiseTube app turns a smartphone into a calibrated sound level meter and tags measurements with GPS coordinates. The data feeds into a public research database.
There's sensor.community, a global network of citizen-deployed environmental sensors. They started with air quality, particulate matter sensors that people build themselves for about 30 euros, but they've expanded into noise. You can assemble a node, mount it on your balcony, and it streams decibel data to a public map in real time. It's not going to do frequency classification like a professional array, but it creates a continuous record that's a lot harder to dismiss than a handwritten complaint log.
One sensor on one balcony doesn't force policy change. 100 sensors across a neighborhood, all showing the same construction site, exceeding safe levels at the same times every day. That's a different conversation with your city councilor.
That's the tactic that's worked for air pollution activism. Citizen monitoring networks created the pressure that eventually forced cities to deploy their own official sensors. The same playbook applies to noise. You're essentially building the data set that proves the problem exists, because right now the official position in most cities is, we haven't measured it, therefore it's not a problem.
The quantified self meets the quantified neighborhood. I can tell you exactly how many decibels your pile driver is dumping into my living room at 6:45 in the morning. And here's the graph for the last 6 months.
For listeners who want to go further, if you're a policy person, an activist, or just someone who shows up to community board meetings, the thing to push for is noise budgets tied to permits, not just static limits. A static limit says, don't exceed 75 decibels at the property line. A noise budget says, you have X decibel hours per week, here's how they're allocated by phase, and exceedances trigger automatic consequences.
The data has to be public. That's the Copenhagen lesson. If the readings live on a municipal server that nobody can access, you've just created a more expensive version of the same broken system. The accountability comes from the dashboard that any resident can pull up.
The third thing, and this is something anyone can do tomorrow, is look up your city's noise ordinance and check whether it actually specifies a measurement methodology. If the ordinance just says excessive noise or unreasonable noise without defining how it's measured, what the thresholds are, what the averaging window is, which standard the meter has to meet, that's not an ordinance. That's a suggestion with legal formatting.
The legislative equivalent of don't be annoying.
If your ordinance doesn't specify measurement methodology, you have identified a gap worth raising with local officials. Because even if the political will for automated enforcement isn't there yet, getting the methodology into the ordinance is the prerequisite for everything else. You can't enforce what you can't measure, and you can't measure what you haven't defined.
We've got the measurement tech, we've got the enforcement models. The next question is whether all of this eventually becomes as ubiquitous as traffic cameras. Because the noise camera concept, automated, always on, always listening, that's where the privacy questions get uncomfortable.
A traffic camera takes a photo when you run a red light. A noise camera, by definition, has a microphone that's live continuously. Even if the device is only doing onboard classification and not streaming raw audio, the perception is different. People don't like the idea of a government microphone pointed at their street 24/7.
The acoustic panopticon. You're not being watched, you're being listened to, which somehow feels worse.
It does, and I think it's because sound feels more intimate than sight. A camera sees you from a pole across the street. A sensitive microphone array can potentially pick up conversations on a balcony. The technical reality is that these systems are designed not to do that. They're tuned to construction frequencies. They discard voice band data. They don't record. They just classify and log metadata. But the technical reality and the public perception are different things, and the perception is going to be the harder problem.
The if you've done nothing wrong, you've got nothing to worry about argument doesn't exactly have a stellar track record of making people feel better about surveillance.
I think the path through this is the London model. The microphone is part of a camera unit visibly deployed for a specific enforcement purpose. The data processing happens on the device, and the only thing transmitted is a violation record with a timestamp and a classified source type. No audio leaves the device. That's a design constraint that has to be non-negotiable.
The privacy safeguard is that the microphone has amnesia. It hears, it classifies, it forgets.
That's the ideal. Whether every vendor implements it that way is a separate question, and it's one regulators need to be asking before these things get deployed at scale.
The other piece of the future I keep coming back to is predictive modeling. We've been talking about measuring noise as it happens, but the construction industry already uses building information modeling, BIM, to model everything from structural loads to energy efficiency before ground is even broken. The same software can model noise propagation.
This is the next frontier, and it's exciting. You take the BIM data, the equipment schedule, the piling method, the site geometry, the surrounding building heights and materials, and you run acoustic propagation simulations. You can see, before construction starts, exactly which facades are going to get hit hardest during which phases. And then you can optimize.
Instead of reacting to exceedances, you're designing the schedule around them. Piling happens midday when ambient noise is higher and fewer people are home. The noisiest equipment goes on the side of the site that faces the office building, not the residential block.
You can model the effect of different equipment choices. Hydraulic pile drivers versus diesel. That's a 10 to 20 decibel difference right there. Temporary acoustic barriers. You can model exactly how high they need to be and where they need to go to shield the most sensitive facades. All of this can be optimized in software before the first truck shows up.
Which also changes the permitting conversation. Right now, a developer submits a noise mitigation plan that says, we'll try to be quiet, and the municipality stamps it. With predictive modeling, the plan includes actual simulated noise maps, and the permit can specify you predicted 65 decibels at this facade during this phase. Here's your budget, and we'll be watching.
The model gets validated against the real-time sensor data as construction proceeds. If the predictions and the measurements diverge, you know something's off. Equipment changed, schedule slipped, mitigation wasn't installed properly. The model becomes an accountability tool, not just a planning tool.
The construction site as a system with a digital twin. The noise budget is predicted, monitored, and enforced in a single data loop.
That's where this is all heading. We're not there yet. Most cities are still arguing about whether to buy a single decibel meter, but the pieces exist. BIM software from companies like Autodesk already has acoustic simulation plugins. The sensor networks are proven. The enforcement frameworks have been demonstrated in Copenhagen and Toronto. It's not a technology problem anymore. It's a political will problem.
Which is where we came in. The pile driver at 7 in the morning. The municipality sending thoughts and prayers. The canyon with a jackhammer at the bottom. The tools to fix it are sitting on the shelf. The question is whether anyone picks them up.
If you're dealing with construction noise in your neighborhood right now, start measuring it yourself. The NoiseTube app, a sensor.community node, even just a consistent decibel log on your phone. The data is what changes the conversation. A graph of 6 months of exceedances is a lot harder to dismiss than a phone call saying, it's loud.
The municipality can ignore your complaint. It's harder to ignore your dataset.
On that note, Hilbert, I believe you've got something for us.
In 1946, Soviet engineer Mikhail Gavrilov completed a manuscript describing an electromechanical computer designed to solve differential equations for oil prospecting in the Caspian Basin. The machine used rotating magnetic drums and cam-driven integrators, and the manuscript included hand-drawn schematics so detailed that a working replica was built from them in 2019. 73 years later, it ran perfectly on first power-up.
A 73-year boot sequence.
That's remarkable. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps. We're at myweirdprompts.com. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. Go measure something your municipality would rather you didn't.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.